The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Herschel Finman. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be doing a rebroadcast with Kenneth Marcus, who is the U.S. Commissioner on Civil Rights. And civil rights is still and always probably will be a hot topic. We've got some really awesome music. We've got some really awesome music this week. The portion of the week is the portion of Shlach, continuing in a wonderful Bible story in the book of Numbers, a Hasidic story that you're not going to believe. Hopefully we'll have time for it. And before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. An Israeli border policeman was lightly injured at the Tapuach Junction near Ariel when a terrorist approached the border position and opened fire. The other policeman fired at the terrorist, killing him. A riot broke out after the shooting. Stones were thrown at police. Police responded with tear gas and rubber bullets. Two protesters were taken to the hospital. The Israeli Air Force struck a terrorist center in southern Gaza and a second terrorist center in central Gaza. The attack was in response to a rocket attack by Gaza terrorists into southern Israel. A Chabad mobile synagogue was destroyed by fire in Judea over the weekend. The two Torah scrolls were completely destroyed. Police suspect arson. You don't say. Israel approved 1,500 new homes in Judea and Samaria and 400 new homes in the Ramat Shlomo neighborhood of Jerusalem. The tenders were issued as part of Israel's response to the establishment of the Hamas-Fatah Palestinian Authority unity government. U.S. Ambassador to Israel Daniel Shapiro strongly condemned the move of the new housing. Israel canceled the VIP cards of all senior PA officials except Chairman Mahmoud Abbas. Not having the cards will prevent top-ranking Palestinian officials from moving back and forth between Gaza and Ramallah. French police arrested Mehdi Nemouch in Marseille in connection with the shooting at the Belgium Jewish Museum last week that left three people dead. Nemouch was in possession of a Kalashnikov rifle. For the first time, Israeli security forces used the Iron Dome anti-rocket system to deflect a missile fired at Israel from Syria. Several rockets were fired at Israel. One landed in a forest. No injuries were reported. The International Olympic Committee will contribute $250,000 towards a memorial to the nine Israeli athletes killed by Palestinian terrorists at the 1972 Munich Games. German taxpayers will pay most of the $2.3 million project, which was to be completed by September of 2016. And finally, and in only an Israel moment, police in Be'er Sheva conducted a drug raid and found that the dealer was in the middle of making a bris, a ritual circumcision for his newborn son. The suspect requested the arrest be delayed. As soon as the cries of Mazel Tov, it says that the policeman actually sat down and waited on the couch. As soon as the cries of Mazel Tov were heard, the new father was taken to a custody along with 25 kilos of marijuana. Be'er Sheva police chief commented that he was glad the arrest and the bris came off without an incident. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have
on the live line, Mr. Kenneth Marcus, who is the chief of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. How are you today, Mr. Marcus?
I'm doing great, and it's wonderful to talk to you.
This is indeed an honor. I saw last week floating around on the internet of a new project that the U.S. Commission is doing on campus activities and fighting anti-Semitism. I'll talk about that in a little bit. The first thing that intrigued me was that there's something called the U.S. Commission of Civil Rights. Could you give us a little history of the commission?
Sure. We are an independent federal agency, and we were established 50 years ago to investigate civil rights violations and oversee enforcement of civil rights around the country. We have six regional offices around the country as well as headquarters, and while we are not an enforcement agency, our role is to advise the President, Congress, and other policymakers about important issues in civil rights. For instance, in the 1950s and early 60s, the Commission laid the groundwork for the major civil rights legislation, including the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act, and the Fair Housing Act, by developing a factual record that showed the extent of discrimination in those areas. We also developed the research that led to the Americans with Disability Act and have been influential over the years in recommending all sorts of legislation, regulatory changes, and civil rights enforcement.
Mm-hmm. I understand. There's lots of place in civil rights, and I know mostly when people think civil rights, they think about Afro-Americans. How did the idea of a specific project involving anti-Semitism in campus come about?
Well, it came about for a couple of reasons. First, commissioners were aware that in 2004, the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights established for the first time that it would investigate cases of alleged anti-Semitic discrimination. Prior to 2004, the Office for Civil Rights frequently took the position that anti-Jewish discrimination was purely religious, and since the jurisdiction of that office did not include religious discrimination, they would not pursue anti-Semitism cases. Mm-hmm. Starting in 2004, the Office for Civil Rights took the position that while anti-Semitism may include religious discrimination, it also can include ethnic and ancestral discrimination, which is prohibited by Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The commissioners were interested in that change and were interested in finding out what some of the ramifications were. Second, there had been a number of fairly high-profile incidents around the country that the commission was aware of, including allegations at the University of California at Irvine, at San Francisco State, and at Columbia University, and the commission was interested in finding more about this. The commission's interest led to a hearing here in Washington, D.C. in late 2005, and then a series of recommendations in a report that we issued just last year. In addition to that report, because we found that many students are not aware of what their rights are, we decided that we would do a public education campaign that's intended to make sure that students around the country know what rights they have against discrimination, particularly anti-Semitism on campus.
Wow, that's wonderful. And this issue, when I saw the news piece, I quite literally hopped out of my chair. This is something which is very close and right at home to us. With Wayne State University, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the campus in Detroit here, there are many, many acts of anti-Semitism which have been reported. My daughter, who was a student there, tells me of daily occurrences of diatribes written on chalk in the sidewalk outside the student union building, anti-Semitic things like this. And it really does make people uncomfortable. And now they have, I suppose, a venue at least where they might be able to get someone to take notice about it. So how would someone like my daughter then go about letting you know about what's being written on the sidewalks of the campus of Wayne State University here in Detroit?
We have a complaint line here, which we are now advertising, that students and others can call into. We ask them to call 1-800-552-6843 if they believe that they have seen actionable anti-Semitism or other discrimination, or they can email us at referrals@usccr.gov, and we can work with them. Now, we are not an enforcement agency, so we do not have the power to make universities change what they're doing. We are essentially a research agency. However, we have a complaint referral process through which we can work with students to put them in touch with whatever agency is the appropriate one, whether it's the Office for Civil Rights, whether it's the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice, or what have you.
Mm-hmm. So when this becomes like very much publicized and students know about it, your office may very well be inundated with complaints. How are you going to deal with all of the these pieces of information that are coming into you?
Well, we do have trained staffers who are prepared to do that and who do staff this. We are not limited just to the anti-Semitism issue, but to all forms of discrimination. And there have been times where we have gotten higher and lower volumes of complaints. For instance, shortly after September 11, 2001, we had a very high volume of complaint load, and we simply put additional staff on the task of answering the phones. I don't know to what extent we will get a large volume of calls, but we will be ready for whatever comes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard the news or if you saw it, if it came across the thing. The European Union this week passed a bill making it a crime to deny the Holocaust. Did you see that?
I did see a news article referring to that, but I'm not conversant beyond just what's been in the media.
Right. I understand. I mean, there is no law against such things here in America that people can say, no, the Holocaust never existed, and they may even claim First Amendment right. I'm reminded of Skokie. I don't even remember how long ago it was with the Nazis demanding a right to march through a Jewish neighborhood. Would your commission then be in charge of developing some sort of a policy for such a law here in the United States?
Well, European countries have had criminal prohibitions on Holocaust denial for many years. The United States has not. In general, many European countries have much stronger hate crimes and hate speech laws than we have in this country because we have such a strong First Amendment tradition in this country. We are very much aware of free speech limitations, and one thing that we do stress on our campus anti-Semitism website is that sometimes the hateful speech, as obnoxious as it is, cannot be silenced or chilled by university administrators, particularly at public universities, because of the First Amendment and also because of the concerns of academic freedom. On the other hand, there are two things that I think people need to keep in mind. First, there are some cases that do not raise free speech issues, cases that involve outright physical intimidation, vandalism, or other forms of destruction where free speech simply isn't an issue. Second, one thing that we as an agency have said fairly clearly and strongly is that university administrators often have a moral obligation to condemn hateful speech, including anti-Semitic speech, even when that speech cannot lawfully be curtailed. So that even if it is the case that the First Amendment may protect certain speech and administrators cannot prevent the speech, they still may have at least a moral, if not a legal, obligation to let the university community know that there are some forms of speech and conduct that are simply morally unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned about the idea of public universities. Is your commission also set up to handle complaints and problems on private universities?
Well, the enforcement agency that deals with most private universities is the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Education. And we do have a discussion on our campus anti-Semitism website about jurisdictional limitations. In general, nearly every private college and university, with only a few exceptions, receives some form of federal funding.
Mm-hmm.
And if a university receives any federal funding, it is subject to the civil rights limitations in Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and so they may be subject to government investigation and enforcement. Mm-hmm. Just because they're a private university doesn't mean that they don't have to follow the federal civil rights regulations.
Mm-hmm. So they can't say, well, we're a private organization, and it's like we're like an elite club, and this is the way we run our club, per se, simply because they are receiving federal funds.
There is a very small handful of colleges or universities that truly receive no federal funds.
And I know we have in Michigan, we have Hillsdale prides itself on that.
I believe that's one of them. That's right. But all of the other thousands of post-secondary educational institutions in this country receive some sort of funding, even if it's just scholarships or grants like Pell money for the students. And if there's federal money coming in, the school is considered to be federally assisted, and they are subject to certain federal civil rights laws, including Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth Marcus, you're the chairman of the U.S. Commission of Civil Rights. You mentioned a couple times a website dedicated to anti-Semitism on campus. First of all, what is that website?
Sure. I'm delighted to discuss that with you, and I am the staff director of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights.
Okay.
The website is the core of our campaign. It is a place in which we describe for students and faculty what anti-Semitism is, what they can do about it, and what resources they have in the event that they face anti-Semitism. People can find it linked to our website, which is www.usccr.gov,
mm-hmm.
and it provides a wealth of resources for students and faculty.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things would we be looking there? We'll be finding
there we include a discussion of the nature of anti-Semitism, information including phone numbers and other contact for different federal agencies, advice on who can be contacted to deal with this problem aside from universities, information about how we can help students, links to other documents that would be helpful, including our document on how Uncle Sam can enforce your civil rights, as well as links to basic federal laws and regulations dealing with civil rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, the website includes the poster and flyer that we have, which can be downloaded and printed out or emailed. We are relying in part on what we call a viral marketing campaign, which is to say we have a poster or flyer that has a message, speak out against campus anti-Semitism, and contact information for the Civil Rights Commission complaint line and our email address. And we have made it in a form that can be emailed from person to person and distributed.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that through that way the word can get out and people know how to contact us, again, at 1-800-552-6843.
Okay, so when anybody, I suppose, on Wednesday encounters any of that chalk, they should just post one of the flyers on a nearby tree or wall to
they can absolutely do that, and they can also contact us if they need additional posters or flyers.
Mm-hmm. One last question. Would you say anti-Semitism is its own form of discrimination or just a piece in the general cog that the Commission of Civil Rights deals with?
Well, that's an old and difficult question. And I would say that there has been an evolution in our understanding of that. There definitely has been a lot of scholarship back all the way to the end of World War II on the interconnection between different kinds of prejudice and the relationship among them. And there is a view that says that people who are likely to be bigoted in one way are likely to be bigoted in many ways. And there's a scholarly literature along those lines. There's also disagreement with that, though, and there are any number of incidents of people who may have one form of prejudice but not of another prejudice. One strategy to defeat anti-Semitism has been to try to combat all forms of discrimination, including anti-Semitism, and that's a strategy that's been used effectively in a lot of areas. But the issue has come up more recently that there might be some forms of anti-Semitism which are a little bit different. and which are sometimes held by people who otherwise do not overtly hold other forms of discrimination or prejudice. And for that reason, it's important both to combat all forms of discrimination, but also to make sure that we're looking specifically at anti-Semitism as well.
Okay. Kenneth Marcus of U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, thank you very, very much for taking out some of your time and educating the listeners of the Jewish Hour, and wish you lots of success in this project and your mission here at the Commission.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your attention to this issue.
Take care.
Okay, bye now.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Hey, Shulfeman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. I hope you found that interview with Mr. Marcus to be most enlightening and informing for you, as well as entertaining. We try to do that. We've got music for you. This is a request, just an anonymous request. Somebody just sent me a thing and just... No, whatever. And if you would like to hear something specific, you can do that by going to rabbifitterin.com and click on the Contact Me, which is right on the homepage, and tell me what song you want. And I will try my best. I've been challenged before with some really pretty arcane stuff. If you want it, I'm going to try and get it for you. This one was an easy one. This is the newest song by Eighth Day. It's called Julia, Let's Dance.
אחד אני יודע, this time do me one favor, מצווה להיות בשמחה. שניים אני יודע, when you share it that's the flavor, מצווה להיות בשמחה. So waltz spins on divine, all you can do when it's dancing time. Dance, dance, take it, take it, hule, hule, hule. Dance, dance, take it, take it, I like it, hule. Dance, dance, take it, take it, hule, hule, hule. Dance, dance, take it, take it, I like it, hule. This joy is blind to color. Dark days like any other, it's Vali Yubisimcha. You can dance the heavens open, just enough to slip some hope in. It's Vali Yubisimcha. The show spins on divine, and you can do when it's dancing time. Tans, tans, take it, take it. Hule, hule, hule. Tans, tans, take it, take it. Hai, kike. Heilige Hule. Dance, dance, take it,
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shul Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Shower. There is a new group, ensemble, more like it, called Avivot from Israel. And we have the latest rendition of a song they're calling just Niggun, which just means a song. So this one we're dedicating just for you.
Is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. 18 years ago, when The Jewish Hour first started, we were contacted by the Smithsonian. Their music division is called Smithsonian Folkways or Smithsonian Flyways. They publish very hard-to-find music with a real emphasis on ethnic music. They had, at that time, 18 years ago, a CD of classic, I'm talking classic, I'm talking going back to the times when they're doing cardboard cylinders, klezmer music. And then about 8 or so years ago, they came out with another one of recorded music that they had pulled out of the Smithsonian archives. And about 10 years ago, I contacted them and said, hey, it's been a while since you had anything. And they said, don't worry, we have you on our list, and we will contact you when something comes out. And, true to word, 10 years later, the Smithsonian Folkways sponsored a concert in New York City. So it was called the Yiddish Heritage Concert. And there was a group called Anski, which I'm not exactly sure why it's called Anski. But we plucked one very nice song, one beautiful. I love this song. And so this is Smithsonian Folkways, and the group is called Anski. And the song, they didn't say what the song was called, so we're just going to call it the Untitled Klezmer Song.
In Άγιν έρχομες Σου δε κέρδικο τη χαψηράγι Μη πέι δε λάβες Αχέιν και βράχτο τέι λάβα μου Ας με γεμέρν σημές Ίντερ σου οι δεείς μη Ατσιμού ουν στρινές Οι ατσί και ψιμούν με τσούδε Φιν ζαβάλου πις και μπρούδε Οι δεείς μη
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is the portion of Shlach. It is found in chapter 13 and following in the book of Numbers. The first part deals with why the Jews had to wander around in 40 years in the desert as they sent spies into Israel to perform reconnaissance. They came back with a bad report. Everybody said, we don't want to go in. God said, okay, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Anybody who doesn't want to go in is going to die. And they spent 40 years in the desert dying. But we're not going to talk about that part. That's the famous part. At the end of the portion, there are two stories, or story and commandment, which warrant discussion, specifically as to the juxtaposition of these two incidences. One involves something who's called, referred to as the Mekoshes Eitzim. The Mekoshes Eitzim went out and gathered wood on Shabbos. And the reason why he did this was in order to show that the Torah means business. If you violate the Torah, there's going to be serious consequences. And he was executed for violating the Shabbos. The story, though, if you're putting it in chronology, happened way back, somewhere between chapter 20 and 21 of the book of Exodus. Why it's here, we can understand, is since the portion of Shlach deals with punishments and consequences, so okay, it was put here. Immediately following the execution of the Mekoshes Eitzim, the wood gatherer, is the commandment of tzitzis. Tzitzis are, as it says in the book, it says quite clearly that you have to have fringes or tassels on the corners of your clothing. Now, back then, and true today, people don't wear square clothes. So they had to wear specific garments that were square in order to perform this mitzvah. This is one of those positive commandments, which in Judaism, if you don't do a positive commandment, there's no punishment for not doing a good thing. What there is you don't get the reward. You don't make the connection for having done the good thing. So if a person only had round garments, then he would not be required to wear tzitzis. In fact, the coat, the long kapata that I wear on Shabbos, technically speaking, were it cut, the way one normally tailors a suit, it would have four corners, and I would therefore need to have these tassels hanging from the bottom of my coat. To circumvent that problem, one of the back corners is actually rounded, so it's only really technically a three-cornered garment with a round, and it says quite clearly four. Am I getting out of something? Yes, because I don't want to have tzitzis hanging off of my kapotze. Instead, to show that I really want to do this commandment, I have a talis katan. It is a, in my case, small rectangular woolen garment with a hole cut out in the center so I can put my head into it so that it lays over my shoulders in perfect square, front and back. And therefore, each corner has a specially tied tassel. What's this commandment, which could be placed again anywhere? This is just off the cuff. It's one of the 613 commandments. Could have been placed anywhere from, say, chapter 21 and onward in the book of Exodus up until chapter 33 of the book of Deuteronomy. So the question now begs itself, why is it placed here? There are those that want to answer the question backwards. Next week, we read the portion of Korach. Korach led a rebellion against Moses. And they ask, why is the portion of Korach placed over here? Is because one of the questions that Korach used in his rebellion concerned the tzitzis. So since it is that he concerned himself with tzitzis, so we put the tzitzis right beforehand. But that's backwards. Because we could have put, okay, let's say Korach is so anywhere prior between the giving of the Torah and the chronology of the Korach's revolt, you could have put the story of tzitzis in, and we'd have known about it. Because, for example, you also talked about mezuzah, and really the whole thing about mezuzah comes afterwards, but it is mentioned in the portion of Beshalach way back when. So that doesn't answer the question at all. Rather, there's a point between the wood gatherer on Shabbos and the tzitzis. Our sages tell us that the wood gatherer acted for the sake of heaven. He was not being spiteful. He was not trying to get somebody. He was not acting out of a sense of theological indifference or just saying, oh, you know what, this is a bunch of hooey. That, absolutely not. In fact, the exact opposite is true. It says, Hamakashas Eitzim Nasa B'Shem Shemayim. He did it for the sake of heaven. He martyred himself for the cause to show the Jewish people that the Torah means business. And when it says that there's going to be consequences, there's going to be consequences. Comes now. That was his, he acted for the sake of heaven. And his family was rewarded that they did receive a portion in the world in Israel when the land was divided. Comes now the portion that sits us and says, listen, martyrdom, okay, we don't recommend it at home. We want to show that we really, really mean business. And so, to remind yourself that we really, really, really mean business, wear strings. I jokingly say, when people ask me, what are those things hanging out of your pants? I say, well, it's just to show that Jews come with strings attached. Or you can do it like, it's just like tying a string around my finger, except I've got the string around my whole entire body. Because it says quite clearly, to look at the tzitzis and to remember, to look at these tassels, these fringes, and to remember all the commandments of the Torah. That's so much easier than martyrdom, believe me. The Mekoshes Eitzim, okay. What really would have been, in actuality, if you're doing the chronology, the Jews were commanded 2 weeks before Shavuos, concerning the Shabbos. They got the manna on the 15th day of Iyar, which was a Sunday. Friday, they get a double portion. and they're told you have a double portion because tomorrow, Shabbos, you're not getting any, and don't even go out and look for it because you're not supposed to go outside of the camp, you're not supposed to be gathering stuff, you're not supposed to be cooking, make all your preparations now. The very following Shabbos was when the Mekoshes Eitzim did what he did. Our sages have told us if the Jews keep two Shabboses entirely, the entire Jewish people keep two Shabboses, Mashiach will come. So the Jews kept the first one. Yay! Second one, Mekoshes Eitzim. Boo. We got a consolation prize. We got the Torah. Okay. Yay! But we're still waiting. And had he just done what he did after the giving of the Torah, he wouldn't even have been bothered of doing it, because then he would have been commanded, because they didn't have the commandment of Tzitzis. He would have been commanded, look at them and remember and remind yourself that Jews are attached. And we do come with strings, and we're connected to God, and God is doing it because God loves us. And it's a whole lot easier than going out and collecting wood and getting killed on Shabbos, believe me. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herr Schulfenman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The easiest way, go to my website, rabbifinman.com, www.rabbifinman.com. Right on the homepage, you don't have to go looking around for contact, any of that type of, right in the first paragraph of the homepage, it says, contact Rabbi Finman. You send me a letter, I get your letter, and I respond in kind, and you're a very happy person. You'll also find archived editions of the radio show. Something you want to hear, maybe you missed a show a month ago, go to rabbifinman.com, click on the radio tab. You'll be able to click right in. What else? Well, don't stop there. We have the U Parsha, the Hasidic U Story, the E Parsha, which are other media by which yours truly presents informative and hopefully entertaining messages on the portion of the week, the holidays, stories, these type of things. You'll also find the donations page. We have just begun June, and that means we have to pay the piper. We've got the bills. You have the means for paying the bills. 18 years we've been relying on people just like you to send in your donation to www.rabbifinman.com for any amount. Yes, I appreciate greatly. Somebody sent me a couple months ago a $1,000 donation. Awesome. But I really do, and I'm humbled by the person who sends me $3 or $5. Because I understand if a person sending me $3 or $5, they don't have a lot of money. But if all the listeners of the Jewish Hour sent every month $3 to $5, then guess what? I wouldn't have to waste time. I consider this wasting time asking you to send money, because I could now be doing some more entertaining, educating thing. Unless, of course, you're entertained by me making these requests for funds. So go to rabbifinman.com, go to the donations page, click on the number that you want, write in your own number. It doesn't bother me at all, whatever number you choose. Every number from 1 to infinity is okay by me. It's all safe. It's all secure. Don't like using internets? I understand. Send your donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. I'll be glad you did. I think you'll be glad you did, because we're in 18 years. We're going to continue on for another 18 years, if God willing. God will be happy because, listen, this is going on. This is one of Detroit, Michigan's largest Torah classes. And everybody else listening will be happy that you did too, because we get to continue. And I think that's what you want. So go there right away. Anyway, today marks the anniversary of the passing of Shlomo Goldman of Shvili. And who was Shlomo Goldman of Shvili? First of all, he lived in Shvil, which is many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. He was a fourth-generation descendant of Reb Michal Shlatover, who was a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. And why do I mention that this is the anniversary of his passing? Because there was a story that happened. The city of Shvil was a fairly decent-sized town. It had a Jewish section and a non-Jewish section. The city had a town drunk whose name was Andre. Andre liked to hang out in the Jewish section, even though he was not Jewish, because he didn't get beat up when he was lying in a drunken stupor. And second of all, he could always count on the Jews' generosity that when he felt so inclined that he was hungry, he could beg something to eat and people would give him. They all understood that he's a drunk and he has no means of support and he has no family and no one to take care of him. And so people would give him food. That's what they would give him. So it once happened that Andre got really snockered on a Friday night. This was like heavy-duty binge. This is like intervention-type binging, but they didn't have AA yet. Maybe they did have AA, but I don't think they had it in Shvil. 69 years ago, he passed away. I don't know. But there was no AA in Shvil. And he woke up not really knowing what he was, where he was, but he realized that he was really super hungry. So he went and knocked on the first door. He realized, oh, I'm in the Jewish section. Okay, fine. He knocked on the first door, Shabbos morning, Saturday morning. No answer. Everybody went to synagogue. Second door. Everybody went to synagogue. There's no answer. The third door, he kind of knocked on it, and the door kind of just like creaked open. Evidently, the people didn't close the door properly. He walked in, and his nostrils were accosted by the most delicious smell he had ever smelled in his life. And he walked in and he saw the table was set out with beautiful dishes and silverware. There were two golden baked challah bread loaves sitting on the table. And in the kitchen, around the stove, I don't know how big this place was, you know, most people are always one-room shacks, on the stove was a chalent, which is a meat stew, which has been placed on the hearth from the night before and allowed to slow simmer overnight, and a potato kugel, which you'd call, I guess, potato pudding. I don't know what you would call it. Non-Jews don't eat kugel. So it was a kugel. Let me just tell you, folks, it's delicious. It's potatoes and onions and chicken fat, and you stick it in the oven and you bake it until it all solidifies, and eggs, salt and pepper, until it solidifies into a solid mass, and then you eat it. And you're happy. So he was just beyond himself. He found a spoon and he took this big glunk of chalent, which chalent, by the time it's done, becomes one homogeneous mass. And he just, this expression in Yiddish, schlung der up. Now the word schlung means swallow, but it's onomatopoetic because that's the noise he made, glunk, schlung, when he swallowed this massive amount of food. And then he had a piece of potato kugel. But then he heard people coming. He said, oh, I got to get out of here. But he saw the challah, and he was still hungry, and he grabbed a piece of challah and threw it down his mouth. But he had so much food in his mouth, when he swallowed it, it closed off his esophagus, and he lay struggling on the ground. And unfortunately, Andre died right there on the living room floor by the front door. The people came home, and they were shocked. Here's Andre the drunk. And they didn't know, wait a minute, If the non-Jews on the other side find that we have a dead Andre, not that they care about Andre because he's a drunk, they're gonna lead a pogrom. They're gonna riot against us that we killed Andre. So they ran away right to this Shlomo Goldman of Shvil, the town rebbe, and said, "What do we do?" And he said, "You're right." He went to his own chalent, his own stew. He took out a spoonful and said, "Put this in his mouth." He's dead. He said, "Listen to me." This guy ran. Simple faith. Tried to get into his mouth, said, no, it's not. He said, listen, The Rav Goldman said, you have to put this in your mouth. His mouth kind of just like dropped. He put it into his mouth, put it open. Instantaneously, Andre stood up, one of these zombie creatures, just walked home. The homeowner walked behind him, walked into his own house. When he crossed the threshold, he fell down dead. That is who Shlomo Goldman was. We're going to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you back again next week. Thanks again. Bye.